VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning, it's 10 o'clock, and it's beautiful outside. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here live and in person once again for the 180-something time. And we're here for one reason and one reason only, and that's because you are out there with your radios on listening to us. So if you're a return listener, thank you so much. We need all of you we can get. Tell your friends, and if you're a new listener, accidental or otherwise, try to stick around for the hour. We'll tell you all kinds of fun things. We'll be discussing topics that are germane to financial planning in today's world. We'll be talking about investing. We'll be talking about the markets. And there's always a sprinkle of this and that as to what's actually going on, because like it or not, you can't totally divorce yourself from Washington, D.C. if you're an investor, especially in this heated-up world of tariff talk. And, boy, a lot happened there the last couple of weeks. And the markets are just on edge waiting for the next shoe to drop. And it's creating a lot of excitement if you're into excitement. And to a certain degree, we are, I guess. But anyway, we will discuss all the things that we want to talk about for the next hour with one possible exception, and that would be you. If you have a topic you would like to talk about, all you have to do is pick up the phone and dial 222-TALK. It's 222-8255, and that is 904 area code. And we will immediately put you to the head of the class and take your call and discuss whatever it is you would like to talk about. But there is a lot going on, and some of that turned positive midweek and turned us into kind of a I'd just call it flat-out fun week.
Yeah, the end of the week was really fun.
It really was.
Thursday in particular.
Fast, too. Yeah. One little announcement, and bang.
Yep. It was basically some promising negotiations with Mexico and maybe even China, it sounds like. So the market really liked that news, had a big day, almost 400 points on the Dow on Thursday. And then Friday was a nice day as well, up over 100.
Yeah, when you can follow up a day like that with a day like that.
Exactly, yeah. It really was a nice week. The Dow managed to get a 1.4% gain on the week. S&P had a pretty respectable 0.6% gain, and the NASDAQ actually gave back just 0.3%. My guess is that was just a little bit of sector rotation. The NASDAQ is ahead this year by 13.2%, while the S&P is 6.6 and the Dow is 3.8. So you can see that the NASDAQ is still the clear winner on the year, despite giving back a little bit this week. And it wouldn't surprise me to see those other two catch up a little bit more in the coming months. So all in all, not a bad week, unless you've been invested in metals. If you own metals, it's been a pretty rotten year.
I know.
Yeah, I know you are somewhat heavy into them. I'm very light in them personally, but it's not looking too bad for the future if
they're on sale.
If something happens, though, this dollar, strong dollar, is killing them. So we would have to see something like that turn around, or the economy tank, or something like that, to really see a pop. But they are historically, I would say, on the cheap side right now.
The dollar's getting so strong now that our exporters are going to start complaining here pretty soon.
Oh, they already are. And the biggest one being Mr. Trump is complaining a lot about that. Mm-hmm. But
Ronald Reagan did the same thing. He went out and said the dollar's just too strong.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, what makes that dollar strong is the idiots who are running all the other countries.
Well, there's that, and our economy's doing really well. And
yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of reasons it's strong right now. But
what currency would you rather hold, Turkish lira or U.S. dollar?
Yeah, the one that's off by, or the Venezuela, actually, this week, what did they decide to do? They will cut 5 zeros from their currency to fight inflation.
Oh, so you need, what, 5 times more dollar bills to buy a loaf of bread? It doesn't matter there because there's no bread on the shelf.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't buy anything anyway.
So, but yeah, they're just going to cut the five zeros off the end. That way your $5 million bill looks a lot smaller and more manageable.
Now, Mugabe did it the other way. He added eight zeros.
That makes sense.
Yeah. It solved the problem equally well as taking those zeros off will solve it.
Right.
Like,
right.
Not at all.
So the turkey talk has all but wrapped up at this point, with fears of so-called contagion spreading throughout Europe pretty much put to bed, as they should have been. My guess is that in a month or two, no one will even remember the events that had the market spooked about that last week. An interesting note is that the turkey market is down 62% in the last 10 years. This is normally where I would say, oh, buying opportunity, but I'm not saying that here.
Not with this
no,
guy.
They're, in this Erdogan's case,
Erdogan's a lunatic.
Yeah, you're going to need to see a change in leadership or a change in foreign policy before I would put any money into Turkey.
I would guess that many of the Turkish people are looking at that possibility as we speak.
I would think some conversations are happening around some dinner tables. That's my guess. It was a really, really busy week for economic data. Lots of actually good surprises, and more than to the downside. Perhaps the biggest of the week was the retail sales number. It was expected to show a 0.1% increase, but came in 500% stronger than that at 0.5% increase. That's 2 months in a row of half-point increases, and really another very strong sign for the American consumer. Now, it wasn't that long ago I was seeing headlines, death of retail, ?
Yeah.
And I think that can be put to bed as well. And that was actually what we predicted, that was just a fluke and that the retail sales were going to be fine. And look what's happening. I mean,
when
people
you
are out
people
shopping.
Back to work.
Exactly.
When the going gets good, the good go shopping.
Yeah. Yeah.
They did.
And you're seeing it in the consumer debt numbers, which are rising too, which to me, I know why it happens. It doesn't make sense, though, because you would think, if people are making more money, why would they be taking on more debt? They should be using that money to buy the things they want, not using debt.
But there are components of that debt. One of them is school debt, which is rising astronomically.
No, not astronomically anymore. It actually had the smallest percentage rise in the last 30
years.
Because
it's already $1 trillion.
I mean, it's big, no doubt about it. But colleges cost a lot of money now.
Car loans. Another segment, car sales are slowing down, so you'd expect that to improve a little bit.
Also true, but credit card debt is actually growing, which we hate to see that.
Yeah. You want to think that these people are actually going to pay off those cards at the end of the month, and you know darn well they're not.
And they know that too, but they really should. Anyways, at the risk of sounding like a broken record, weekly jobless claims came in near all-time lows once again. Beat expectations, came in at 212,000. If you wonder why we bring it up every week, it's because this is considered by a lot of people to be the best leading indicator of a recession. So,
yeah, and the real number, the unseasonally adjusted, was down in the 187 mark, something like that.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Look at the size of our population compared to back when these numbers were more common. It's twice as much.
Yeah, and they're not adjusted for that. So it's on a real basis, this is the lowest it's ever been. Percentage wise, I think.
You got to try hard to lose a job these days.
Exactly. Yeah. So if we ever see that number start to creep up towards 300,000, we may start to worry. But right now, we're not worried about that indicator at all.
No, and I don't think there's any reason that we're going to start, because one of the biggest indicators to me, and something I like to watch very closely, is capital expenditures. A lot of things are a little bit soft right now, which I'll explain after the break, because you'd have to expect that in August. But capital expenditures are on the rise, which means that people are investing in plant and equipment, which means there's going to be more hiring going on after the construction time.
Yep.
So there is a lot of optimism out there, and that shows in its own number, too. The optimism numbers are skyrocketing.
I will get to that right after the break.
Yeah, I think there's a little more market wrap to come up right on the other side. Don't go anywhere. We've got lots to talk about. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have a trivia question today, brought to you by Ken Bales of First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 636-7888. And again, area code 904. And you probably reach the man himself. Talking about the market and what's hot and what's not, that kind of thing. Just a measly 5 years ago, both Ford and GM were worth about $50 billion in market cap, each of them. Tesla, little startup Tesla at the time was worth $2 billion in market cap. Easy for me to say. What is Tesla's value today in billions? And I'll take it plus or minus a billion. It's. I'll give you a hint. It's grown, so it's bigger than two.
How's that? That's a good hint.
Probably could have figured that out, right? All right, you want to wrap up a few more little points on
that? I wanted to talk a little bit about the housing data we saw this week. It actually looked a little bit better. It's been pretty poor lately. There's a number of reasons for that. I don't think that the housing market is in real trouble, but I do think that we may have seen a recent high in the cycle right now. But we did see housing starts missed, but housing permits beat. So permits are more leading than starts. So that's a good sign that the builders might be planning on building more houses in the future. And the home builder confidence came in at the expectations. So that's a number that's been declining recently, and it actually came in and looked okay. So a little bit better news in the home builder segment. And then we also had one of my favorite reports, the NFIB Small Business Sentiment Report. It showed the highest reading since 1983. Pretty impressive. And
we're going to break for a second because good morning, Al.
Yeah, how you doing there?
Real fine. How are you?
Okay. I'll take a crack at the trivia.
Sure.
$52 billion.
You, my friend, are correct.
Yeah, okay.
It's about 51.1 right now, so you're within the tolerance range, and that is correct. Now, the reason I brought it up is because although they're not selling a whole bunch of cars yet, they're getting going, but it is now larger than either Ford or GM. And that shows you that this market is looking pure forward and not backwards.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's true, exactly.
Yep. Well, good. I appreciate it. Anything else we can do for you, or I'll put you on hold and let Alan get your address, and we'll send you. What do we got this week, Adam?
We have gift certificates to the Homestead Restaurant.
Oh, good. Are you a local, Jacksonville?
Yeah, in Mandarin.
Okay. Well, if you want to slip across town one of these nights and come out and slum it with the rest of us at the beach, it is a well worthwhile trip to go to the Homestead.
It is. It's good.
Is that the one on Beach Boulevard right at the bridge?
It was.
Yeah.
And now it's on
now
Penman.
Yeah,
it's not far. It's right around the corner from there, about two blocks from there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Not far
all right,
at all.
Good. Yeah, we'll do that.
All right.
Alrighty.
Great. I appreciate it. I'll put you on hold.
Okay. Thank you.
Nice 5 years, huh?
What's that?
Their market cap has increased $10 billion a year.
Pretty impressive.
For each of 5 years.
Well, and I mean, they just keep putting out this product that is, it's sort of like the Apple of cars.
It's just
everybody thinks it's so cool and wants one. And I see why. It's impressive.
He's using Steve Jobs' theory that I'm going to tell you you need this, and then a little later I'll show you what it is.
Exactly, yeah. And then it comes out, and you're like, oh, yeah, I really do need one of those.
Yeah. Kind of funny.
So, anyway, so the Small Business Sentiment Report was the highest since 1983, which is pretty impressive, and it showed that, interestingly, quality of labor is now the biggest issue facing small business. And when you consider the tight labor market, that kind of makes sense. But my point is that this is great news for those of you that are trying to get a raise this year, because if there aren't other people that can do what you're doing, they are probably going to have to pay you more. So keep that in mind when you go into negotiate your next raise. And then lastly, earnings season unofficially closed this week when Walmart absolutely crushed their second quarter.
That was a four-bagger.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. The beat rate on both earnings and revenue were very respectable, but lower than the last two quarters. The earnings rate came in at 65.5%, which is still higher than most quarters since 2010. And the revenue rate was at 67.4%, also higher than most quarters in the same time period. Mm-hmm. And a little bit of that, I think every quarter for the last three quarters now, the rate has fallen a little bit. Mm-hmm. To me, it kind of looks like analysts are catching up to the tax law and being a little bit more accurate with their predictions going into the quarters now that we've seen the effects of what this law is doing and the Trump economy.
I didn't have a chance this morning, and I don't know if you'll know this number, but do you know what the percentage increase in profits were year over year for the quarter?
I heard it a couple of weeks ago. I believe it was somewhere in the 22% range.
Yeah, that was the same number I came up with. I don't have that updated yet.
I didn't look at it this morning, though.
But that number is far more significant than what happened in the prior two quarters, because this time of year, cyclical industries do the same thing that they did last year and the year before. It's a much more apples to apples comparison when you're doing the Y over Y, year over year, rather than the sequential months. And I look at some of these analysts and I say, well, new orders were down, so we probably peaked on it. Well, but they also say, well, we looked out 6 months, they look a little better. Do you know what happens in August, people? Absolutely nothing. People don't go to work. Wall Street's dead. Volumes are down. They're going out to their beach houses one last time before they close them up. Their kids are getting ready for school. Parents are taking their kids to college. They're not thinking about the market or anything else until right after Labor Day, and then we'll dive into it big time. Weakness in orders right now, ho-hum. I'm unimpressed. Underwhelmed completely, as it were. I just thought I'd throw that in. Anyway, how does the market look to us? Pretty good.
Yeah, I have no complaints.
If this trade negotiation keeps going, Canada's going to feel an awful lot of pressure if we settle with Mexico. And that's going to make Mr. Trudeau eat some words, I think.
Well, the fact is Canada places tariffs on us as well. So
big
he is being
some
he is not telling the whole truth when he says that Trump's behavior is aggressive towards him, because they do the same thing to us.
275% on dairy products.
Yeah.
He's protecting his farmers, which is the stated purpose of a lot of people for tariffs. Our stated purpose is not that. Our stated purpose is to get rid of tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
So see what happens, won't we? Good morning, Larry.
Is this an opinionated question, kind of an aside?
Sure.
These tariffs that are being implemented, this is kind of political. Would that not be analogous or very similar to a VAT tax?
Not in my opinion.
You don't think so?
No, I don't, but it's for a real technical reason. The VAT tax is refunded to the manufacturer when something is exported. So let's say they charge a VAT tax on a BMW and they send it to America. When the car is sent to America, the German government rebates their VAT tax to BMW.
Right.
What happens when you charge a tariff? Who puts that in their pocket? Our government.
How about the consumer?
Squeeze
the big consumers.
Yes,
the big loser.
Squeeze
in all
them
of
out
this
and wring them dry. Which is why
consumer.
The only reason to do this has to be to get rid of them, because ultimately that's all it does is kill the consumer.
Right. Yeah, there's no winners at our level in this if this continues. It has to go away.
Yeah, so yeah. Like I said, it's a very technical reason, and they're both evil as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I agree. None of it's free enterprise. It's all crony capitalism.
Yeah. Free and equal is the only way that business should be done, and it's been years and years. I don't know if you've been listening a lot lately, but I pulled out a list of current tariffs that we impose on people and the current laws that do it. It goes on for pages. There's 12,500 tariffs that we already impose on people, not counting what Trump's been doing. Let's be getting rid of those, I say.
Yeah, just another quick aside.
Sure.
AT&T not too long ago did a reverse, I do believe it was 7-for-1 split reverse.
Yeah, that's what AT&T did?
Yeah, beware of American Tinker Toy. Yes, I got hit.
I'll remember that one.
I took a hit big time.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, they've been struggling. The whole telecom industry has been struggling.
It's been the worst sector basically this whole year.
One of them.
Yeah.
I'm playing by old rules and need to update, and they deserve the hit, although the stockholder necessarily does not. But just a little aside. Okay, I appreciate your
interesting
opinion.
If you can stay tuned for the second half here, I think Adam's got a little story to tell you about a stock splitting adventure that neither of us had ever heard of before, that only made sense after I had a whole weekend to think about it.
And even then, it doesn't really make sense. But yeah, that was my topic.
All right, great.
Live on World Tour via Family Financial.
All right.
We appreciate
it. Thanks a lot for the enlightenment. I appreciate it.
But of course. Marshall.
Does the name Michael Pillsbury ring a bell with either of you?
That's Dr. Michael Pillsbury to me, right?
Yeah, the China expert?
Yep. I've seen him twice in the last 2 days on TV.
Can I hang on and mention something that's
coming up? Yeah, okay, if I put you on hold, we'll discuss Dr. Pillsbury when we get back.
Thank you.
Yeah, Pillsbury is a China expert. I'll be curious to see. He's a really smart guy, too. I think Mark Levin had him on a week ago, last Sunday or a week before that. And just that's a one-on-one talk thing, so you really get to understand where somebody's been, what they know. He's a very impressive guy, and thankfully I think he's on our side. I wouldn't want him to be on the Chinese side of this one.
I'm not familiar with him, but...
He knows too much. All right, we're gonna take a little break. We'll be back and talk to Marshall, and we have, gosh knows how many things to go through yet today. It'll probably drag on until next week. But stay tuned, because it gets better and better. Okay, we'll see you right after the break. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Vanway Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
And this segment is brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Things are growing like crazy this year, and it's too hot to do it yourself. Call Troy at 662-9794. All right, we were talking to Marshall, and we're going to pick up on that right now. Good morning again, Marshall.
Hey there. I'll make a quick comment and then a question for y'all.
Sure.
You know, the only way really to understand some of these topics and all the context around them is to read in depth from someone who really understands it. And China is such a confusing point to so many people. And we hear so many folks on the news media throwing a lot of garbage out there. This man really, I mean, when you read his biography, he's really got the background.
And I then heard GPS.
About China's process of their, I think it's called the 100 years plan or 100 years war.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Of how they're going. And my question for y'all is, do you have a like suggestion for those trying to understand the impact of tariffs?
Oh, boy. Besides wait and see?
Yeah, I understand we can do that, but still you'd like to have an understanding of the context.
Well, if you...
Someone who really understands it.
If you go back... Take a left, Marshall.
I'm sorry. I'll just listen to y'all on the air, okay?
Okay, that's fine. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Great. Thank you.
If you really want to discover the roots and the, I guess, the what not to do's about tariffs, read the history of the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act, which was implemented, I believe, in 1929.
Yeah, or started at least.
It was a reaction to the crash and the recession, depression, all that stuff. And it was an across-the-board measure by some very ill-advised politicians who thought if we were to act totally protectionist, that our industries would come back to life because we wouldn't be importing. And it didn't work.
No. In fact, it's largely credited with lengthening the Great Depression.
Yeah, because it was an interference with free commerce, basically. Mm-hmm. And it did not help our capitalistic system at all. It was on everything, whether it's raw materials or whatever. So it was roundly criticized and subsequently abandoned, and it has left a taste in everybody's mouth for 90 years or so, 80 or 90 years, that says tariff equals bad. Well, tariff for the wrong reason does equal bad. Tariffs today, this is why it's hard to discuss it. We have no real background to tell us, here's what happens with the current tariff policy. We haven't tried this before, except in little bits. Now, think back. George W. Bush added steel tariffs for the steel that was being dumped by Japan and China. They went away after about 6 months, and everyone declared it a failure. I don't know if it was a complete failure or not. I've never really found a way to analyze that completely. Barack Obama put tariffs on some imported goods, very specific ones. It subsequently went away, too. These were done to put pressure on people who were illegally dumping their products in our country. And remember back even further. How about Harley-Davidson motorcycles? We imposed a tariff on Kawasaki's because even police departments were buying Kawasaki's back then. And Harley, frankly, had not been doing a very good job. So Harley was getting its act together and starting to make a better product. But they needed help because sales were falling because Kawasaki was taking so much of it away. Well, they implemented the tariffs on the Kawasaki's, and they kept them for a while. And then all of a sudden, the Harley-Davidson people went to Washington, D.C. and said, remove them. We're ready. It worked. So they removed the tariffs, and you all know what's happened to Harley since then. Now they're having some systemic problems right now, the same as the car makers are. The younger generation doesn't do the driving that we all did. Fewer people are buying cars and bikes, and those that have them are getting older and older. That's not the point. The point is that the tariff was implemented and worked. Those things have been done a few other times in the past, too, and they're made to alter the behavior of people, not just from other countries, but also sometimes internally. Once they're not needed anymore, the secret to a tariff is get rid of it. And I was just saying to the caller that the number of tariffs we have are astronomical, and Trump's stated goal, I've heard him say it at least twice now, is to use these tariffs as a means to an end, and the end is to eliminate tariffs. If we had truly free and fair trade around the globe, everything would be less expensive for the consumer. The entire standard of living of the world would go up. I think they're being used in a very credible manner now. I only wish I could do more than have a specific, like Harley and what was the other one I was using? Whatever. Anyway, the ones that were imposed that worked, Obama did it on tires.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? And it lasted long enough that we solved the problem and it went away.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody who's used them in the past few presidencies seems to have used them successfully, but they were not broad general. They were very specific.
Well, combating, it's two different things, though.
Yeah.
One thing is free trade. The other one is combating dumping, which is mm-hmm. Most people consider an illegal practice where you sell into another country as to not disrupt your home market at below your cost to get rid of excess product. And what that does is it undercuts the producers in the other country and can be very damaging when something like that happens on a large scale in the United States. So I think combating that is a great idea or a great example of a place that tariffs are effective.
Mm-hmm.
But when you implement broad protectionism of industries in the U.S., like we've done in the sugar industry over the last 30-plus years, we pay double what the rest of the world pays for sugar, and that's the net result.
We pay 10 times what it's worth.
Yeah, but we pay double what everyone else pays for it. And we have for in 2012, I'm looking at an article that estimates the cost to the American consumer was $3 billion extra that we paid in sugar.
And why?
Because we've been protecting them for years, and that's just always how it's been.
And that's how you get votes in Florida.
Yeah.
Why does everybody support ethanol? Because they want votes in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
If we would take Iowa out of first place in the primaries, ethanol would go away.
Oh, that'd be great.
Wouldn't it? It's just useless. I remember the first month, it was a few years ago in the summertime, I remember the first month that more corn went to ethanol than to food. And I read that and shook my head and said, something is terribly, terribly wrong with a system like this. So this is a very complex topic. Obviously, it's a wonderful question, obviously. And I really wasn't joking when I said wait and see is probably the best way to find out if this is going to work. It's showing signs. China sent in a delegation over this week, a low-level delegation, to reopen the talks. We're very close with the Mexicans. And if the Canadians see us and the Mexicans coming to terms with a redo of NAFTA, they only have two choices, join us or separate from NAFTA. and then do the one-on-ones, which Trump would love. He really prefers the one-on-ones.
Yeah, he doesn't like the group deals at all.
But so much stuff goes back and forth between Canada and Mexico and just goes through our boundaries that they have a vested interest in solving this problem as NAFTA instead of as two bilateral agreements or three mm-hmm. bilaterals it would take.
And the China case is, I mean, they have so much more to lose than we do. And I think eventually they have to come to the table. But in China fashion, my guess is they'll have to do it in a way that makes it look like they won.
Oh, they won't lose face over it. But remember, we've got about a 4-to-1 leverage. We buy a lot more of their stuff sure. than they buy of ours. And that gives Trump heart saying, okay, I think I can do this now without any long-term repercussions because they have to give in. They absolutely need our markets.
Look at what's happened in their stock market versus ours this year. Since all this began, we've gone up. They are tanking.
And was it Tenant, I think, the other day announced yeah, that things are just falling off the earth.
Way, way down.
Yeah. So what you're seeing is the effects of what I firmly believe, as a free trader, I might add, mm-hmm. what I firmly believe is an excellent policy so long as the stated goal is the one we're actually working toward, and that's to get rid of them. We'll all be so much better off. It'll be like getting another raise. First your tax cut, and then the elimination of tariffs, and everybody's better off. After the break, Adam's going to talk about the strangest stock split either of us has ever seen. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we promised. Adam is going to tell you a little story that popped up in the office among our day jobs recently, and we kind of looked at each other and said, this is the only thing that it could be, but why?
Yep. So first I'm going to give you some background, and then I'll tell you the story about what happened. I'm sure that most of you have heard of a stock split. It's pretty common. It's when a company decides that the price of their stock has gotten too high, it makes it unattractive to small investors to buy in lots of 100, which people for psychological reasons like to buy in, and historical reasons as well.
Historically, it was cheaper.
Right.
As
that's
Adam points
no
out,
longer
that's
the
changed,
case. You pay the same trading
there was
fee.
There's a good basis for
yeah.
that.
But anyway, it doesn't actually affect the market cap of the company. It's simply the market cap is just measured by the stock price times the shares outstanding. So a company that has 100 shares of stock trading at $100 each has a market cap of 10 grand. If they do a 2-for-1 split, they would have 200 shares of stock worth $50 each, market cap 10 grand. So there really is no change in the value of the company when shares splits. And they when they split their shares, despite the fact that this shouldn't happen, it actually they'll see a bump in buying activity after the split. So that can influence the price of the stock and increase it. It's a psychological trend that's been studied and documented. It really shouldn't happen, but it does.
There's a rule of thumb that goes back forever that says when a stock splits, it almost immediately heads back to its old price.
Right, but it's not true, but it does start in that direction, and that has been proven. So there are a lot of investors and finance professionals like myself and Warren Buffett that think that splitting stocks is ridiculous and has no benefit outside of the company's marketing and investor relations teams. And if you've ever looked at Berkshire Hathaway, I don't know what it is today, but it's in the hundreds of thousands of dollars yeah. per share. So obviously Warren does not believe in splitting his stock. Otherwise, that would not be the case.
His version of that was to issue the B
the
shares.
The B shares, which are also pretty expensive now.
They're getting up there too, yeah.
So they're pretty useless for individual stocks, which makes them an absolute waste of time for a mutual fund. But that is exactly what Fidelity did last weekend with some of their best-known funds. They actually did 10-for-1 share splits on funds such as Contra Fund, Magellan Fund, and a variety of their sector-specific funds. All of them were trading over $100 a share and some as high as almost $230 per share. The official word from Fidelity was that they were aligning their NAV, their net asset value, of the funds with those of their peers. So they're saying that other mutual funds like ours trade around $8 to $12. We want to be in the $10 range, so we're going to split our shares.
And it's 100% psychological.
Exactly.
But I can understand.
So the funny thing is, mutual funds don't even really get traded in shares. They get traded in dollars. I logged on to our TD Ameritrade institutional platform and did a fake trade in my own account. I didn't execute it. I went in to try and do it, and I tried to buy a mutual fund in shares. You can't do it. It's not even an option. You can only buy in dollars. You can sell in shares, but you can't buy in shares. So why on earth would it matter how many shares you own? Because you can own a fractional share of a mutual fund. So let's say it's valued at $100 and you want to buy $50. You'll get 0.5 shares of that mutual fund and you'll hold it in your account. So it just makes no sense to me outside of a marketing move. And I don't know. We thought it was really strange. You very, very rarely see a mutual fund split their shares.
What's the hang up for an investor on those?
What do you mean?
We've had a couple incidences where...
Oh, so what happened? So the reason I brought all this up was pretty funny, actually. On Saturday morning, right before the show last weekend, I received a notice from one of our clients that there was money missing from their account, which is, you know, obviously...
It's not something people like us like to
hear. Very concerning. So I immediately got on my computer, and sure enough, their account value was down more than it should have been, even though the market had been down on Friday, so it wasn't surprising to see it down, but it was down substantially. Started doing some research, and they owned contra fund, and it looked like the value of their contra fund had dropped, well, I found out later, by 10 times during that, from Friday close of business till Saturday morning. So,
and anybody who knows Fidelity Contra Fund knows this has been the best fund over the last 30 years that you could possibly imagine.
It's a great fund. There's no way that it had dropped that much. It was down, I think they did the math, is like 89% or something in real terms. But so I knew something was up. I started looking around, and I hadn't received a notice about the share split, but I found it right away, and that's what happened. And then Monday, before the market opened, the value was restored. It turns out we had that contra fund in three or four accounts, and all the same thing happened to all of them. So it was a little concerning, but it was brief, and that's how they do it. At the close of business Friday, it's one value, and then Monday morning it's back to normal.
I had the same thing creep up in business several years ago when Oakmark Equity Income Fund did a large distribution. It was a year where they had good dividends and capital gains. And they did it on Friday, and they didn't credit the shares till Monday. So the active investors are looking at their account on Saturday morning thinking, oh, my God, that fund fell $5 overnight. It never does that. It moves 10, 13 cents a day, something like that, and that was it. And they credit the new shares the next time. So mutual fund investors have to be aware of those things, or you might be in for an ugly shock sometime that isn't worth the worry that you'll put in over the weekend.
Yeah, it was. You don't ever want to get that call from one of your clients saying, my account, where's my money?
Pretty funny in retrospect. Another real life story. Last week, right now, we walked into the studio and Howard Vergalis was here, and as they were wrapping up the real estate show, and he asked Adam and I a question, asked Adam and me a question. What would happen? I have an IRA that owns a piece of real estate in it. When I die, will my heirs have to sell the property? And we thought for a minute and then started thinking aloud. Said, well, no, there's no law that says that you would have to do that. But from a practical standpoint, yeah, they're eventually going to have to, because when you inherit an IRA, now there are exceptions, and we'll go through them. Yes, eventually, the true answer, the long-run answer.
I've actually changed my thought on that yesterday.
Okay.
They don't have to. They would just have to remove it from the IRA.
Well, that's the same thing.
It'd be an option.
And that, because I believe that would be considered self-dealing, would cause it all to be taxable.
There's got
to
be an exception.
I don't think so.
I don't know.
I'll know more next week than I do right now, but I wanted to think about some of these things. In that IRA, there's one asset and then a little side fund, the money itself. So it's a single rental property. The rent gets paid to the IRA, and the IRA has to maintain the house. That includes taxes, insurance, and new roofs and all the things that might go wrong with the house. Well, assuming that rent keeps flowing well enough, or if the original IRA owner can still contribute to it, which here's where the rub comes in on the time of death, and I will go into this more next week, But it, as long as the IRA owner can either contribute to it, let's say they need $5,000 and they haven't fed any other IRAs, so they've got $6,500 to work with if they're 50 years old or older, they can dump the $5,000 or $6,500 or whatever in there, and then that IRA will pay for those expenses from that contribution.
But you can't, you have to remember the IRA guidelines. You cannot exceed that number. So exactly. If you have a $7,000 expense, you can't put $7,000 in.
The only way you can put more money in is to do a rollover from another IRA that you own, and you can roll the money in there. So if you needed a $20,000 roof and you have another side IRA that has $20,000 in it, you can do a direct trustee-to-trustee transfer rollover. Put the money in there, and then the IRA can put the roof on. So far, we don't need to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to an inherited IRA? Once the inherited IRA becomes inherited and the title changes, no money can ever be put into that account again. The account has to earn its own money. So as long as the rents are coming in, nothing changes. But now we add another codicil. The year after the death of the original owner, the required minimum distributions start. And that might be very small depending on the age of the inheritor. It could be 2% or 3%. Well, as it grows every year, and the more money that's taken out of it, the less you're going to have on the side. So how much cash flowing is done inside that IRA is a function of the rent and whether or not the house is owned free and clear, because your IRA could have a mortgage on it. So if you're appropriately confused by now, I don't blame you. And I'm going to go into this in much more detail next week, only it's not going to be just about that. It's going to be about should you or should you not even consider buying real estate in your IRA. And then I'll do a side piece on should you put gold in it, and if so, you want to keep it at home? I'm going to give you a preview. No! How's that? That was my preview. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you again next week, same time. This is the Ben with Financial Hour.